Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Our next case is In Re Interest of Austin G. You may approach. Again, the next case is In Re Interest of Austin G. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Kyle Dahl. I am the court-appointed attorney representing the appellant in this case, Kayla S. She is the mother of the juvenile in this case. This is an appeal from the Wayne County Court sitting as the juvenile court. This is an appeal from an order terminating her parental rights to her son, Austin G., dated August 31st, 2016, following the merits on the trial for termination of parental rights filed by the guardian ad litem in this case. The facts are not really in dispute, but I would like to just give a real brief basic timeline of some of the events that kind of set this up. In August 2012, a juvenile petition was filed under 43-247-3A, alleging abuse and neglect. That was August 6th, 2012. August 13th, the mother admitted to the allegations. Shortly thereafter, in November, there was a disposition hearing, a plan of guardianship. Paternal grandparents was recommended in the case plan, and that was adopted. Letters of guardianship were issued then in December 2012. At that point, DHHS was dismissed from the case. Moving on then into 2013, after the guardianship is established, there was a motion filed for visitation plan in May 2013. Subsequently, then there was a motion to terminate the guardianship filed by the mother. In this case, in October 2013, visits were occurring during this time. They did eventually taper off, and if there was any factual dispute in this case, that was probably it about why the visits tapered off and her reasons why she felt like she couldn't continue to have visits. But then during that time, or subsequent to that time, around September 2014, the mother moves to Missouri. She's down there for a period of time up until around March or April 2015. In between those two dates, then a motion to dismiss, her motion to terminate the guardianship was filed. And then in May 2015, the guardian ad litem filed the motion to terminate parental rights. Trial began in October 2015 and then was continued two times for a couple reasons. One, that her first court-appointed attorney actually withdrew. And then that it was continued to March, and then finished in June, and the order was issued in August.
Go ahead.
By the time of trial, how much time had lapsed since she had last had contact with her son?
I believe the testimony at the hearing was that the last visit, or the time that she had contact with her son, what I believe was in August, September 2014, prior to their moving to Missouri, if I recall correctly.
The motion to terminate was filed on May 7th of 2015, and according to what I recall from the record, she'd not had a visit with Austin since August 5th of 2014.
I believe that.
Is that fair?
I believe that is the correct evidence that was adduced at trial.
And how old would Austin have been in August of 2014 when she last had contact with him?
I believe he...
He was born in 2012, wasn't he? 2011 or 2012?
So he's about 2.5,
yes,
it looks like.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, really, though, like I said, the facts aren't really too much in dispute in this case. Our argument, the appellant's argument, is really that the state and the guardian ad litem that had the burden of proof in this case to prove by clear and compelling evidence two things. One, that one of the statutory grounds existed, and two, that termination of her parental rights was entitled to. And our argument is essentially that they failed to meet that burden of proof.
Don't these facts qualify for an abandonment under 292.1? because there had been no, visitation, there hadn't been any kind of contact for at least 9 months when the motion to terminate was filed.
Right.
So how is this not an abandonment?
Well, that is one of the two things that they do need to prove, and my client's not necessarily willing to concede that point. But even if they did prove that sufficiently, they met their burden of proof on that issue, there still remains the issue of best interest. And that's why, in my brief, we put that.
And the state only has to prove one of the statutory elements.
Correct. One of the 11 statutory grounds.
So assuming this meets the statutory definition of an abandonment, what is your best evidence that it wasn't in the best interest of the child to terminate the relationship?
Well, my client actually does not have to provide any evidence. The state and the guardian ad litem have the burden of proof.
Well, let me reword that then. What's your best argument against it?
Our best argument against it is that at the hearing, there are a couple things. First of all, she has testified that she's been drug-free since 2013. She's completed moral recognition therapy class, completed an intensive outpatient therapy, and you know, she has been able to maintain employment off and on throughout this time, and she has three other children now since the time of this removal, and no, you know, subsequent involvement with HHS, no further allegations of abuse regarding those children.
But we have an almost 3 to 4 year period of time where there's been almost no contact. There's no parent-child relationship here. So how is it not in the best interest to leave the child with the paternal grandparents?
Well, there's a line of cases that we discuss in our brief, with beginning with In re Aaron D, In re Heather G, Kenneth C versus Lacey H, that describe what the state has to prove to meet their burden of proving best interest. And what all these cases say is there has to be something, either, you know, teachers, therapists, support workers, someone who actually can testify about the child's interests, his needs, the mother's parenting ability, what her current ability to parent this child is.
Well, she didn't really give them much opportunity to assess that, right? I mean, she failed to show for more than half of the arranged visitations with this child and had absolutely no contact after August of 2014.
Well, I believe it was her testimony that she tried to have contact, and for whatever reason, eventually she wasn't able to make contact with the paternal grandmother, and I think she just felt like she eventually just gave up trying because she couldn't make it happen. But what these cases all state is that, well, there's no evidence that a continued contact with the mother is harmful, it's presumed to be beneficial. For example, in Kenneth C. versus Lacey H., the father went 4 years without providing for the child, yet the court found that there was insufficient evidence to show that termination was in the best interest of the child. There was no record in that case of current or future parenting ability.
In this case, though, we had evidence that not only of no contact or no cards and letters, no gifts, there might have been a question of fact on phone calls, but the judge heard the witnesses and obviously decided to believe one version over another. We also had, you had the drug problem, you had being out of state, being in jail. Those kinds of instability factors that weigh heavily in this case.
And those things are certainly relevant to the case. We're not saying they're not, but there has to be both the past and the future considered when you're talking about best interest. I believe one of the cases mentions that, you know, when you're looking just at adjudication and proving the statutory grounds, we look to the past. But when we're looking to the best interest, you have to look at the current situation as well as the future. And it's our argument that there was really not sufficient evidence.
Well, what was her position about the future? What was her position regarding what the future should be?
Her position is that she's made changes in her life that she would be willing to, if nothing else, continue to have visits or start visits again.
Well, wasn't she asked whether she was at some point wanting custody, and she said no?
Well, I believe that the question at the trial was, you know, would, at this point, would she even just be willing to accept visits? And she said, yes. You know, he just wants to maintain her parental rights. So, with that, I do have a few seconds left. I'd like to save that for rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right.
Better see, are we going to divide time here?
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you splitting time?
Yes, we are.
And how are you going to do that?
I am Mark Elbin, the guardian ad litem, and I expect to use probably 6 or 7 minutes and share it with the deputy county attorney.
Thank you.
Your Honors, as guardian ad litem, I filed the motion to terminate parental rights. This case was not probate guardianship, it was a juvenile court guardianship. At the commencement of the case, it appeared to be reasonable to have a guardianship, that there would be some expectation of the mother reunifying. That did not happen. And Your Honor, Judge Bishop commented about the timelines. What we have in this case is a child that was born on April 18th of 2012. The first abandonment by Kayla came on August 5th of 2012 when Austin G. was only 3 months and 18 days old. Exactly 2 years later, when Austin is 2 years, 3 months and 18 days old, it happens again. And Your Honors have correctly noted that what has happened here is just a trailing off of the activity and the effort to reunify by the mother to the extent that it just ceased to be. And it's obvious from the record there was no contact for almost 9 months, but it was trailing off before that time. What's interesting here too is there was a bad situation with the tornado that hit Pilger. It did cause a relocation of the foster parents, the paternal grandparents. However, their phone number remained the same, their contact, their information to the court was all disclosed and very open and obvious. What happened, and it's in the record, and I think Judge Pearl noted, is that Kayla also had some criminal activity at this time, and a warrant was issued for her arrest at the time that she conveniently dismisses this motion to terminate the guardianship. The fact of the matter here is Kayla may have made some positive direction in her life, and that's good for her. But the focus of this case is on the child. And we don't have a child that's 5 or 6 years of age. We have a child that is the most vulnerable, a small child. And the court, as I think the trial court did, simply took a judicial notice that we have a child that doesn't even know this mother, because at the most formative, the time in a child's life when a child needs a parent, a mother, she has chosen to be absent. And nothing in the record shows that something was done by something out of her control. She made choice. Unfortunately, she made poor choice, and it was about Kayla first, not Austin G. first. And so, to that extent, the child grew up, became bonded, and then all of a sudden she leaves. Nothing out there. There's testimony that there was even efforts made by the paternal grandmother. Where are you? What's also interesting that's not even in this record, we didn't have any efforts to involve social media or something like that. But a simple phone call is the way at least most people my age still work with, and the paternal grandparents. They were available, they were there. So we have a situation here where the judge found that at least three of the criteria needed, but quite frankly and clearly the abandonment is what I was really focusing on.
Isn't the idea though of a guardianship to give a parent some time to address issues that are going on in their life, and not necessarily be that engaged with the child as they try to clean up their life and get their act together, right?
That is correct. It is a
so that should not be used against her.
It should not. But we don't see anything attendant that she made any further efforts. She pulled away from the child. It would be if she was going to school, she was getting her life in order, but
well, she was going to treatment.
Now, she did go to treatment previous. That was prior to the time when she had some visitations set up by the paternal grandmother to help her do what needed to be done, even to the extent that the paternal grandmother would initiate visits. That last visit was initiated by the paternal grandmother, who came from, I think it was Howells, all the way to Norfolk, just so that Kayla could have a visit, which turned out to be unfortunately the last visit. Then she disappears. But that's, we don't have the situation here where somebody needs some time to kind of get something in order, and they're doing something.
So if after her treatment she had re-engaged, you might not be here.
Re-engaged to the extent that she was having contact. These two-hour contacts with the child that were scheduled, and she would make, and quite frankly, I guess, I don't know if it's in the evidence exactly who was providing the transportation, but it was there, but it was very irregular, sporadic. The record talks about her drug use, the living conditions, just the general inconsistency in her life. And although it's not in the brief, it was a comment made in an argument to the court that it goes to a high level and talked about Kayla's indifference and inexcusable lethargy, and I'd have to credit that to the deputy county attorney. And I really think that that says a lot here. We have a small child, and that you cannot take away from this case. It's not as if this child, Austin G., has to wait until his mother is ready to begin parenting. The law has recognized that. That's why we have 15 of 22 months. And quite frankly, that is plenty of time. And I'm someone who took a long time to come around to such a quick termination. We used to have cases that would go 3 and 4 and 5 years before we'd maybe get to that point. But the child deserves more. And in this case, the statutory period for abandonment had been met. There had been nothing out there to suggest anything was going to change in light of the way she left. And so at that point in time, it was filed. The judge heard the evidence. He heard what everybody had to say, how they looked, and made a decision based upon what was in Austin's best interest. And so we would ask the court to affirm the decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And may it please the court. My name is Eric Knudsen. I am the deputy Wayne County attorney. I did not file the motion to terminate parental rights, but in all aspects, I have been supportive of the guardian ad litem motion and do believe that the county court did come to the right case. I believe the facts have already been discussed. I would like to jump straight to the best interest analysis, because frankly, I do believe that is the point of contention here. I believe that the statutory grounds are more straightforward, and they are very apparent from the record. Specifically, the mother made multiple points in her brief that there were no therapists, no counselors, no experts in this case to tell the court that it would be best for the child to terminate the mother's parental rights. But I believe there's no legal requirement that there be a therapist or a counselor to testify at these hearings. And of course, the county court, sitting as the juvenile court, did not feel that that was required as well. Here, the case was so simple and the writing was on the wall that the juvenile is doing well in placement. That's why HHS placed him there initially. I believe the testimony says he is a healthy, happy, and active boy. There's no need for a counselor or a therapist, and I don't believe that should be held against the guardian ad litem, because he was doing fine, not to mention that he was, from the age of 6 months into, I believe he turns 5 next week.
Can you speak to Mr. Dahl's argument regarding best interest should look to the future? And given that the evidence shows that the mother has not used alcohol or drugs since, I believe, November of 2012, she's married now, she has 3 additional children, there don't seem to be any issues. Can you speak to that, please?
Yes, and I do agree that the best interest should look to the future, and all we are doing is guessing what the future is going to hold. And I think one of the main indicators of future performance is what you've done in the past, and I think that's very evident here.
But people make mistakes, and if they've turned themselves around, should they not be given an opportunity?
It is commendable that the mother here is drug-free based on her testimony. What is still clear that from 2012 until today, she has made no improvement in her employment status. In fact, she has worked less now, the last couple of years, than she did prior to 2014. She worked more often. Continues to be no support financial, or at least very little support financial or otherwise. Case. She continues to have legal troubles from 2012 all the way to 2015. Her husband also has legal troubles and has been in jail very recently. The addition of 3 children, while we don't know if there have been issues with her parenting abilities, I guess I would like to point out that They've lived in multiple states. They've lived in multiple counties. Either the mother or the husband, father, have not been employed during that time, so they've been home. They have moved, I believe, to 11 different locations since this case has started. So we don't know. There have not been reports or any allegations of anything with her parenting ability, but she continues to not have a vehicle. She does not have a driver's license. Her husband does not have a vehicle, does not have a driver's license. And since 2014, after she took the therapy, after she's been drug-free, she decided to move to Missouri, complete desertion of any parental obligation, any parental responsibility. All that happened after she was clean and she'd been through therapy. So I do think she has improved, but in regards to Austin, the juvenile in this case, which is obviously the focus, her parenting ability has not changed.
There was also some evidence about, was it moving in with her father and his wife or mother? I can't remember, but that he was a convicted sex offender?
Yes, Your Honor. I do believe there is evidence that mother's father, with whom she has lived, I believe, twice during the pendency of this case, is a convicted sex offender of the mother's sister when she was a child.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there rebuttal time? Mr. Dahl?
Very briefly, I would just like to note that the guardian ad litem admitted in his argument that the mother has made progress in her life and her parenting ability. The law does not require perfection of the parent. It looks to see whether she has made progress, and she has. Did she make more poor choices in the past? Absolutely. But termination is the last resort. There's no testimony here about whether or not it would be harmful for this relationship between mother and child to continue. Again, it's the state's burden of proof, not my client's. Finally, this is not a custody case. We're not comparing option A versus option B, which one is better. This is solely the focus on the mother and the child. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The matter is submitted. You are excused.